Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. So things are heating up for the Oblivion remake, and we decided that we're going to do lore episodes on Oblivion stuff, and this episode is very specifically designed for people who are just getting into Oblivion, but also people who haven't really thought about it much in the last, how long did we say it was going to be, Lotus? 18 years now? 19 years?
19, that it's been, I believe.
19 years?
If I'm not mistaken, 2006? Yeah, so we're in year 19.
Yes.
Getting it all in, hopefully, under the 20th anniversary.
Right. Oh my gosh, yes. So here's the fun thing, is that I thought it would be important to cover something that a lot of people would want to know about and have questions about, but also in doing this, you know how I do sometimes, Lotus? I came up with a new crazy theory that I don't think is actually that crazy, because there seems to be a lot of evidence.
I don't think this one's super crazy, and this isn't going to be one where I'm like, Tom, I don't know if I know where you're going with
you're like,
this.
That's a fun
I think
idea,
this is one where I'm actually more on board with you after we discussed.
Right. So anybody diving into Oblivion for the first time, or who remembers from playing 19 years ago, will remember that a large premise of the story is based on the idea that there are dragonborn emperors on the throne. They have the Amulet of Kings, and those two elements come together with lighting the dragon fires and how all of that stuff works. So I thought we would cover that stuff. And for the majority of this episode, we're not going to do any spoilers about the way the story actually plays out during and after the events, except for like just at the beginning of the game, which is like tutorial stuff. So it's seriously like the first 30 minutes of the game. So we're going to cover most of that stuff at the end. When we get to spoilers, I'll let everybody know. So if you want to just dip out for that, you'll know where to do that. So Lotus, let's get this started. So the Amulet of Kings, Dragonborn Emperors, how does all that work? Like, what's the generally understood premise for all of that?
So basically, due to this extenuating circumstances from the Cold Harbor Compact, we can't just have Daedric Princes barging into Nern and ruining everything. That's just a no-no.
Yeah, nobody likes that.
Nobody likes that. Nobody's happy about that. But as a kind of aside, officially stated, as long as there is a dragonborn emperor on the throne, and they are in possession of the Amulet of Kings, we can keep the dragon fires lit, which keeps invasions of Nern at bay.
Right.
Nice and straightforward.
And this was a pact that began with Queen Alessia, who was the first of the human, like mannish emperors of Cyrodiil, and she's the one who rebelled against the Aeliads, who all worshipped all these Daedric princes, and with the help of Akatosh looks down, and this is at least how the story goes, looks down and had pity on the humans and decided, you know what, I'll help you out. And
too many gut gardens, we're going to put a stop to this.
Too many gut gardens, too many terrible things, we're going to help the humans out. And somehow imbued the Amulet of Kings, or created it himself, or put his blood in it, something like that, and then gave it to Alessia, who was somehow now a dragonborn, which we'll get to in a minute. And due to that connection, she could then light the dragon fires, which would then create a protective like field around Nern, which would keep Daedric princes from invading. It doesn't keep all Daedra out, but it keeps major invasions from happening. That's the general concept. And ever since then, there has been, or at least there should be, a dragonborn emperor on the throne, and they do the ceremonies and they keep the fires lit and everything's okay. That's the general premise. And it's been like that for, you know, ages of the world, let's just say.
Right. And I guess as a short aside too, just we're not going to dive into that because this isn't really an Oblivion style thing, but the Cold Harbor Compact that I mentioned is also like basically Sotha Sill doing a for the Dunmer another version of this,
right?
Because again, everything is always from the perspective of their culture,
right?
So Dunmer, right, very, you know, isolationist in many ways. They kind of have their own way of trying to reinforce this, but what with the Imperials kind of being at the heart of Cyrodiil and Tamriel in general, this is kind of the overarching, like, here's how we keep everybody safe.
Right, and that's a really good point, is the reason why we know about this story is from The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, which is seems to be getting a remake and releasing any day now. And that is from the perspective of the Empire. So, of course, they're going to have a specific view of this. They're going to venerate their own history and the importance of them being on the throne and all that, but we'll get to a little bit of that more later. So let's go back in time. People who are, may not be familiar with Oblivion are probably familiar with Skyrim, and in Skyrim, you're the dragon. You're the last dragonborn, but you're not the emperor, and you meet Mirak, who is the first dragonborn, who is brought through time and, well, actually sent to the realm of Hermaeus Mora and then comes back from that realm, and you have to deal with him and all of that stuff, and we learn through that connection that he's from the Merithic era and he predates Queen Alessia. So Queen Alessia is not the first dragonborn. And so let's get into it. So what does that even mean? What does it mean to be a dragonborn? Well, there are some requirements. So we learn a lot about these in Skyrim. First, you have to supposedly you have a soul of a dragon in a mortal body, that you are a dragon embodied in one of the races of Tamriel, right? Secondly, you can absorb dragon souls. Third, you can speak the Thum, which is a very Nordic Skyrim sort of thing. Doesn't really show up in Oblivion. Interesting. Fourth, you're favored by Akatosh, supposedly. At least is the assumption, because there's that connection to Akatosh there. And you also might be of the royal bloodline, but that doesn't seem to apply to everybody, like Mirak or the last dragonborn, right?
Right. It's one of these situations where one is not synonymous with the other.
Yeah,
you can have overlap, but it's like that Venn diagram thing where sometimes you get dragon blood, so you're a dragonborn,
right,
and you're of the royal bloodline, but it's that little centerpiece that kind of happens where it's like, that's not always what's happening. It just can be.
In fact, it almost seems like they're two separate circles, because if you think about it this way, can you verify that somebody can absorb dragon souls? Yes, you do that in Skyrim. Can you verify that somebody can speak the Thum? Yes, you do that in Skyrim, but not everybody who speaks the Thum is dragonborn. Like the old guys,
like,
up in the mountain.
All the graybeards?
All the graybeards, yeah. Like, they can speak the Thum. It seems like anybody, or at least anybody who has the capability to, can learn to do it with training and, you know, just kind of casting magic. Everybody can cast some magic, it seems like. That may not actually be lore accurate, but it in every game you have the ability to...
Most people have the ability to...
Right, they may not be able to...
Some magical aptitude.
Right, they may not be able to master everything, but at least, you know, it seems like there's aptitude there, right? So those things you can test for. Can you actually test if somebody has the soul of a dragon or dragon blood? Not really. I don't think there's a way to verify that.
Call up the ideal masters.
And right. Can you test if somebody is of the lineage of emperors? Well, sort of. You can look at their parentage, but a lot of that is obscured. And if you look at the actual line of emperors, even just from Tiber Septim, there's all sorts of weirdness in there. Like, there's all sorts of weirdness. Like, Tiber Septim's children didn't inherit the throne. It was his grandson. And then you go down the line and all of a sudden it's like this person descended from the wife of somebody. And it's like, well, were they already part of that lineage? How does that work? So there's no for sure definition of being of the dragonborn emperor bloodline. That's not really something you can verify. So it seems to me that maybe you've got dragonborn who are natural dragonborn, who actually have the abilities of dragonborn, but then you also have the line of emperors. And sometimes those things may not even be the same thing.
Yes, and that's something that we kind of wanted to just touch on briefly, is this part of the lore kind of expanded later on in the series. I always like to bring back some of the things that have been so long-standing, or things that we see game after game after game, and how Arena really was its own beast, but it had the bones of stuff that was really kind of expanded upon later in the series. This is something that really didn't come about too much until much later in the series.
Right.
Prior to Oblivion, this really wasn't that much of a thing. So it kind of makes sense that they have these different sections of the lore that they now are connecting more as this is being expanded out. But this is not one of the OG things. So it also explains why it gets a little dicey.
Right. And there
some
can
of
be
the original concepts, if they're not there at the start, kind of, you can see them slowly working it in more than it's like, oh yeah, that's an obvious fit.
Right. And is that because they're adding more as the series goes on and they're like, oh, well, this, we never said this was a thing, but now it is. So they're retconning things. Or is it that as the world moves on, they come up with different justifications for their own history, which happens in the real world all the time.
Yes, I was going to say, propaganda is a thing, and it's written into this series constantly. So the fact that it's like them trying to play up this requirement has a lot of political value to different parties, it basically vying for control of the throne.
Right. And so by the third era, by the events of the Oblivion Crisis, it seems like this is just common knowledge. This is how everybody views everything. But that doesn't mean that was always the case. If we go back, we can look at certain emperors and we can see that, for example, Riemann Cyrodiil in the first era, 2703, lit the dragon fires with his voice. That sounds like a Thum sort of thing. It doesn't sound like just he held up the amulet and was able to light the fires, right? That sounds more like, okay, I'm actually like a proof of dragonbornness, which means I get to be the next emperor, which seems...
Instead of a parlor trick where you have like that thing where you like breathe on a lighter and you can make it go forward. I feel like he's not doing that with the Amulet of Kings himself.
Right. And that feels like it would have inspired somebody like Varen Aquilarius in the Second Age during the events of Elder Scrolls Online to decide that he needed to be Dragonborn in order to justify his lineage, right? But he wasn't. And if you look at his lineage, many of his ancestors also weren't, or at least don't seem to be.
Right.
And then you get to after his time, you have Tiber Septim within a few hundred years of his reign. And Tiber Septim absolutely seems like a dragonborn. And if you want any clarity, and there's very little clarity about Tiber Septim, go back and listen to our episodes about that, because he may have been more than one person. He may have mantled Lorcan. There's a whole bunch of wackiness around Tiber Septim, but let's just go with the fact that he at least was some sort of powerful being or multiple beings in one who seemed to be actual dragonborn and created the Septim line, right? Then that goes
right. Especially
through time.
If there's multiple. The odds that one of them is going to be a dragonborn is much higher.
Maybe so. Yeah. So, and then the Septim line goes up to Uriel Septim, the seventh, who is, I think it's the seventh, right? Who is in Oblivion and, the events of Oblivion, right? So we have kind of this hodgepodge of stuff, but yet by the time of Uriel Septim the seventh in Oblivion, the justification is that he needs to have descendants to make sure that they keep the dragon fires lit. Otherwise, bad guys.
Yeah.
They get invaded.
Oh, all Oblivion portals.
Oblivion portals everywhere. So that's kind of where we are. But in my understanding of this, there's a lot of holes in this. And so I kept digging. I got a little bit further into this. And it turns out that there absolutely are periods of time without Dragonborn emperors or no emperor at all. And yet, no Oblivion Crisis, or Mehrunes Dagon, Molag Bal, who invades during the Plane Meld in the events of Elder Scrolls Online.
The whole time of the Interregnum, which we're dealing with a lot around the time of the Elder Scrolls Online, part of the story is the fact that there's no solid emperor, which is how the PvP aspect plays in, because everybody's fighting for the throne and getting crowned and then murdered briefly thereafter, and it's like, okay, well, we just have a hodgepodge of people basically claiming emperorship and either getting it, not getting it, or getting it and then immediately getting executed. So
right,
it's like...
right. And so at least during those events, you have some invasion of Nirn, which tracks. No emperor on the throne, no, you know, fires, no dragon fires, so therefore an invasion can occur. So that makes sense. But there are all these other periods in history where that doesn't add up. So for example, the War of the Red Diamond. You've probably heard somebody sing the song Red Diamond, right? The War of the Red Diamond coincides. You can read some of the books about it. And the context here is that Empress Kintira II, there's two Kintiran emperors, whose cousin of your, her cousin Uriel III usurped the throne and led this to like a civil war between septim heirs, right? This whole idea of like who really is the real line.
Right.
And Uriel III, who was born Uriel Mantiarco, not Manimarco, Mantiarco, interesting name, son of Potema, known as the Wolf Queen. Wolf Queen, another book you've probably seen in the games. His claim to the Septim bloodline was contested during this. What happened with the dragon fires? Well, because of this disputed legitimacy, it's uncertain if the Dragonfires remained lit during their reign. So they had this moment where nobody was really emperor, there was a dispute, and yet the Dragonfires remained lit, maybe? But there was no invasion. So,
or it's one of these weird things is, you know, was it pure luck that there wasn't an invasion because nobody was tending this situation?
Right.
It's one of those, like we talked about, one doesn't necessarily beget the other all the time. You can also fall into this convenience situation. It was like, well, if nobody's trying to invade at the moment that this is out, you still won't get an invasion.
Like, right. So there are some other justifications for it. Like maybe there nobody was invading. Why wouldn't they just take the opportunity to invade? They're Daedric princes. They're going to take whatever opportunity they can get. So why wouldn't that occur? And so one of the theories is that even when the Dragonfires go out, for a period of time, Akatosh still maintains his protection, and it just kind of depletes over time. And this can mean lots of different things. Daedric invasions sometimes are physical invasions, like portals coming out with Daedric coming out. Sometimes it's just more bad dreams, and the perception of reality gets changed because the Daedric princes can mess with people's minds, and like there's all this weirdness about it. So maybe some of that stuff went on and we just don't have it documented. So this moves on. So we get to the Imperial Simulacrum, which we talked about, Jaegar Tharn, Uriel Septim the Seventh goes to a pocket realm and is impersonated. These are the events of like arena.
And also, just for clarity's sake, just because I do like to point out the fact that like it, you know, it's fun. They do a really good job of making things ambiguous and giving us lots of room for discussion where, you know, we can actually come up with logical reasons to have different thoughts on something and have it play out in this series. The intro to Arena, Uriel Septim is actually a typo. I believe he's the fourth in that
he's one. The he's fourth. That's right. Seventh. That's right. Seventh shows up in the text. I pulled the wrong text. That's the fourth Septim. That's the first
Uriel. It's one of these things that's sort of like...
It's, if the fourth is a typo, the seventh is real.
Correct.
Yes.
That is what it is. Okay, the seventh is real. The fourth is like... It's listed as the fourth in that game, but then that doesn't...
Right.
Match continuity wise. So just for anybody that's interesting, that's kind of a little fun retcon that I didn't remember until I originally played Arena. I was like, wait a minute, what number is he?
And, in fact, it only says it in the text at the beginning during the little intro video. And then after that, it's all seventh.
I believe it's corrected later on if I remember. It's been a little while since I played Arena, but yes, it's basically the intro video has a typo.
Right. And during this event, Uriel Septim's in a pocket realm of Oblivion, and Jaegar Tharn is pretending to be him, and Jaegar Tharn is not a dragonborn, could not have lit the fires, and yet, and there's a lot of turmoil, but there's no Daedric invasion that happens during this time.
Just, in fact, there's barely any reference to Daedra period during this time, because Daedric princes really weren't that much of a concept yet during the real life game time that Arena was released.
Right. And so we have to put the dates in context here. This is the third era, 389 to 399, which is hundreds of years after the events of Elder Scrolls Online. And in Elder Scrolls Online, we have kind of a pre-Oblivion crisis, and we also have the Plane Meld. We have two different invasion attempts, at least, during that time, hundreds of years later. And yet, if the dragon fires during this time wouldn't have been protecting everybody, then those Daedric princes would have been ready. It was a number of hundred years later. They were already prepped. They already tested out the ability to do this. So why didn't they invade then? And on top of that, the events of the Oblivion Crisis are in 433, which is like 30 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, Maerun's Dagon is now ready to do this. And of course, and this is where we're starting to get a little bit more spoilery things. Uriel Septim the Seventh at the very beginning of the game is killed. It doesn't seem like he has an heir. And the Mythic Dawn do their thing and things happen. And it seems like whatever they're doing leads the invasion to be possible. Or does Maerun's Dagon do something in particular that allows the invasion to be possible? And it has little to do with the Dragonfires, which I'll get to in a minute. Then we have the Stormcrown Interregnum. This is the fourth era, 15 to 22. So after Martin Septim's death, the end of the Septim Dynasty, which, as I said before, we're getting into spoiler territory, but if you've played Skyrim, you have a sense of this. There was not a clear successor to the throne, and yet no invasion.
Right.
So
another scenario where it's like, all right, so nothing.
So, okay, so let's go through the variables. Does the dragonborn on the throne matter at all? It doesn't seem like it does. Do the fires being lit actually matter, or are they just symbolic? Well, it seems like they might just be symbolic. What about this? Was being dragonborn ever a requirement for being emperor, or was it just politics? Because it wasn't really anything they would test. It wasn't like they'd be like, all right, do your thum and absorb a dragon soul, because there weren't dragons flying around.
Right. There's very rare scenarios throughout the series where dragons are active that much. I mean, it was implied there's, you know, less activity with the times of Skyrim, but you know, there have been dragons, you know, whether you want to acknowledge ESO or not, it's part of the series. So, you know, they've got that little thing in the whole Elsewhere region that happens where it's kind of confined to that region.
Yeah.
And then also for any of the seven of you who have played The Elder Scrolls Redguard with me, you actually encounter a dragon in the Emperor's, like, army at that point. That's actually how he sieges one of the bays. He just flies in on a dragon, just nukes everybody. Right. It's like, well, okay, that seems pretty good. Like,
yeah, so it seems like there's dragons that are at least around a little bit, but not regularly enough for people to be like, oh, dragons are common, we see them all the time.
Right, let's drag one in here and see if you can eat its soul real quick.
Right, so there's really no way to test that. So it seems like it's a politically advantageous thing to just say, I'm dragonborn, and the people just have to believe you, right? Like, otherwise, how do they even know? Because we mentioned before,
some wings on a Gwar and trying to pretend it's a dragon.
Right. Because if the test was, can you, you know, use the thum? Well, lots of people can use the thum, or at least can learn how to do it. So that's not a very good test. So let's move this on and go, okay, well, if it has nothing to do, or has very little, at least, to do with being dragonborn, lighting the fires, then what else could there be? Well, during the events of the Elder Scrolls Online crisis, Manny Marco causes the Soul Burst. The Soul Burst was an event where he tricked Varen. What's his last name? It just fell out of my brain. Aquilarius.
Aquilarius.
Varen Aquilarius into giving him the Amulet of Kings in order to turn him into a dragonborn. And of course, Manny Marco used that against him and created the Soul Burst. Immediately after that, and the Soul Burst is described as like messing up mages, this big explosion comes out of the capital, people get all messed up, and immediately after that, all of a sudden, Moleg Bal can start dropping anchors and start trying to pull Nirn into oblivion. Invasion begins, right?
Right.
Soul Burst. Now notice that. Similarly, you have the events of the Oblivion Crisis and the events of the Mythic Dawn abducting the Amulet of Kings and taking it out of Nirn into a pocket dimension, another event that takes it out and puts it in a pocket dimension, basically neutralizing it and allowing the Oblivion Crisis to happen. Both of those events have very little to do with an emperor being on the throne or the fires being lit, although those things are coincidentally happening at the same time.
Right. It's very interesting because, again, it does seem a bit more coincidental than anything else currently happening, which is what makes this an interesting idea. And to your point on the Oblivion Crisis, one thing that's worth noting is another thing that happens during the event of the Elder Scrolls Online is you basically have a mini Oblivion Crisis at one point. It's not quite the same, or it's not nearly on the same scale, but it's interesting because it almost feels like Mehrunes Dagon doing like a test run, like, hey, does this work?
Yeah.
And granted, you shut it down, provided you complete that storyline and everything like that. But it seemed like his first trial run that it was like, okay, this can work fundamentally, but you put a stop to it before it gets too extreme. And then he goes a little more all in during the events of the Elder Scrolls 4.
Right. So why was he able to test that out during the events of Elder Scrolls Online in the second era? And Mehrunes or Moleg Ball was able to try to invade at that same time, and then Mehrunes Dagon tried this again during the events of Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Well, both things coincide with the amulet either being manipulated by Manny Marco or being removed from Nirn by Mankar Cameron. So that seems to be the connective tissue, because as I stated before, invasions didn't happen if the fires went out or a Dragonborn Emperor wasn't on the throne, but as soon as you start manipulating the amulet, they do. So it seems like there's a combination of manipulating the amulet in some way or taking it out of Nirn and the Daedric Princes having some method with which to initiate an invasion, which would be the Soul Burst or the idea that the Gates of Oblivion can be created through Sigil Stones. I mean, that's a big premise in Elder Scrolls Oblivion, is this idea that the Sigil Stones, every time you enter a portal, you have to go find the Sigil Stone and you have to take it out. And so that closes the portal. So it seems like in both cases, the Daedric Princes had to be prepped and have the means to create an invasion at the same time that the amulet was being manipulated. Is that track? Does that make sense, Lotus?
Yes, I'm on board with you with this. So yes, yeah, that tracks to me. Like I that's no notes. I don't really know what I would add to that.
Right, right. So if you actually look at the events of Oblivion, the extinguishing of the line of emperors was just extra. It didn't need to happen for the invasion. It weakened the empire and it allowed for unrest to happen, but it wasn't necessary for the invasion because it had nothing to do with the line of kings and the dragonfires.
Right.
So how does this actually work then? And I think what this actually comes down to, that at least we have rumor that the Amulet of Kings itself is directly connected to Akatosh. And it seems to be the case that if that is not functioning correctly or is not currently in Nirn, then Akatosh does not have a part of his physical being. Like the blood of Akatosh is in the gem, kind of like the heart of Lorkhan is in the Red Mountain. And if that right. is not physically in Nirn doing what it's supposed to do, then Akatosh cannot maintain connection and protection over the realm.
Right. You basically need a foot in the pool to go swimming. You right. can't just.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's weird because it adds this element of credibility that gives all of this like credence, but at the same time, how much of it is real, I guess? You know what I mean? Like with the way it's presented. Because clearly there is something blocking these invasions, and it's well, again, without overtly spoiling the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion for anybody, you definitely get some very concrete interactions with gods to end that game.
Right, right. And
so you know yeah. there's something to this.
There's something to it, yeah. And so here, some absolute, like I'm hinting there were little bits of spoilers already. Big spoiler.
Right, but I don't want to just ruin the ending for people who are excited to play this.
So. Right, so I've warned people at the beginning. Big spoiler right here. The Amulet of Kings.
Skip a few minutes.
I'll just say this. Does not survive the events of Oblivion. We'll just say that. It doesn't fully spoil it.
There you go.
But the Amulet of Kings does not survive. By the end of the story, it is broken. It is done. But we have events in Skyrim that take place after the events of Oblivion, and yet we don't have an invasion during that time. So there must still be some element that keeps the invasion from happening. Maybe that's the fact that there hasn't been a soul burst, or there isn't the ability to create more sigil stones or something like that. Or maybe an invasion is happening, and the perception of everybody in the world is being manipulated by Daedra. And maybe because Akatosh doesn't have full control over a connection to Nirn anymore, that's what allows Anduin and the return of the dragons. Had the does that make sense? They're not Daedra, sure. But so Anduin is not in line with Akatosh's will when it comes to the.
You mean Alduin?
Anduin. I'm sorry, Alduin.
I can already tell you people are going to go nuts on you. Yeah, so
sorry, Alduin.
You got it. But.
I'm so bad at words. Alduin, it comes back, right? And it right. seems to be that the will of Akatosh is not that Alduin ends the world, right? Like, because he seems to be against that, but maybe isn't. This is where things get really foggy. So
it does get weird because, again, we won't go off on another tangent about Kalpas, but, like, is it time for things to reset? And by basically preventing the end of the world, quote unquote, are we dragging on this cycle past where it should be and we've screwed things up? It's right. hard to say.
Right.
Like, but if there's case a lot is, of variables.
Right. But if the case is that Dragonborns are connected directly to Akatosh through their bloodline and through the ability to manipulate souls and all of that, like that, the,
right.
like historically, Dragonborns have been associated with Akatosh and you. Right. are the avatar of the Dragonborn, the last Dragonborn, and you are against Alduin, then it seems to imply that Akatosh, that Alduin, and I think the story kind of reinforces this, that Alduin is doing his own thing, and it's not necessarily yes. in line with Akatosh.
Correct. It's kind of almost independent of each other. There's just these weird overlaps that, you right. know, get into the questions of, like I said, like, is one of them trying to end time and restart it? Is one of them trying to maintain the status quo and keep it as is? Like, what does that mean going forward if this Kalpa were to end? Is this, like, Dragonfire thing supposed to be, like, a running theme through other Kalpa? I don't know. We've never dealt with other Kalpas right. in the series. Who knows? And it's kind of interesting because you had mentioned the situation with not really an evasion, but there's sort of things happening at the same time.
Yeah,
around the situation where Bardow, the big rock above.
I get to Greg, you know, Bardow.
Thanks.
There's so many weird words.
Thank you.
That we, yeah,
I was gonna say, I don't know why I was getting tongue-tied on that so badly, but when that basically slams in and nukes Morrowind, like Vardenfell itself, like. So then we've got this whole situation where there's Daedra pouring out and it ties into the books to some degree, that the two novels where they actually do explore this area and how it's just this just wasteland of horrible monsters and creatures. It's like there's all these like not subtle, because blowing up an island isn't subtle, but like lesser
invasions.
Lesser invasions, like, yeah.
Couldn't you consider Mirak's return a type of invasion?
Right,
the dragons returning a type of invasion? Like, these all, they may not be Daedric princes with their own specific Daedric armies, but they're invasions. Like, maybe Nirn is no longer protected, and that's why these things can happen. So it's not so much that, like, invasions aren't happening. It's that, no, they are. They just aren't the same kind of invasions that have happened in the past.
Yeah, maybe just also not to the same scale.
Right.
Although
right.
with Alduin, it's a pretty big scale.
It's a pretty big scale. He's the world ender. That's what he's supposed to do. That's what he does, right?
Right.
So what this means then is for the Elder Scrolls 6, there will probably be an invasion because there's no safeguard. There's nothing stopping that from happening.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time.
It's free game.
Right.
Open borders.
Open borders. It's just a matter of time for another Daedric Prince to find a way to utilize their power through manipulating an individual like Manor Marco or Mankar Cameron or some other means to actually just bridge the gap. It's kind of like saying, okay, there's no international laws that you can't visit, but you still need a boat to get here.
Right.
They have to
right.
build a boat.
Exactly.
Right. So I don't know. I think that's that is maybe where we are. I hope that I know this was kind of a, you know, this is like all my theories. It's all just kind of like a bunch of information. And so maybe this is the way things work out. So I hope that made sense. If you have other thoughts on this, please kindly, you know, comment on this episode. Let us know your thoughts. We'll take those into consideration. And like a lot of this stuff, there's no definitive answer, but there's definitely a lot of holes. So my attempt is like, how do you fill those holes? How do you justify all those holes? And you can't just simply read the text and be like, well, this answers everything, because it just doesn't.
No, this series is notorious for asking more questions than providing answers. So
So that's where we are. And if you are diving into, if Oblivion Remake comes out sometime around when this episode is up, maybe early next week or whatever, I hope you're enjoying it. We have a patron chat coming up with our patrons next week. We'll see if the game's out and we're all playing it. I'm feeling we know what we're going to be talking about.
I was going to say, I officially don't have time for it, and I'm also very okay with it if it does happen. I'll just figure it out. Who needs sleep, right?
Who needs sleep? All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. We've got to go thank our patrons, but we also have a new voicemail that came in, and we've got, of course, the random page at the end of the show. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Big thank you to our sponsor for today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world taking place in the world known as Tamaris. Team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction. Arrange your city as you see fit and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle. A variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder orcs, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. Oh, and please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magic artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport, or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, we are back, and we've got some new patrons to shout out. Actually, 2 weeks of patrons, because we had that crazy episode last week because of all the ESO stuff. But we've got V. Svitek. I don't know how to pronounce your name. Thank you for joining us. Jay Dumplings. Jay Dumplings. I can pronounce that name. James C. and McCrayfish. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm glad that you decided to help support the show. You get ad-free episodes. Patreon.com/ Elder Scrolls Lorecast. I almost said one of the other shows that I do. I do too many shows. but you can get ad-free episodes. You can get t-shirts and stickers. You can join us for patron chats. The next one is coming up in a week, because the 24th is the last Thursday of the month. So it's just a week away. You've got time to sign up still if you want to join us for next week's episode. And heck, if Oblivion Remake comes out and you want to talk with us on the podcast about it, this is the week to sign up. So consider that. Go check that out on Patreon. Also, we have to shout out our Daedric Princes who get shout outs every week. Blinding Vision, Hersine, Kirasi, and Peter R. Thank you so much for your support. We really do appreciate it. Also, if you'd like to help out in other ways, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We can see the ones in the US, but all of that helps. And this one showed up on the 3rd, but just now I'm seeing it. Lotus, this one says, this is from CC French, who writes 5 stars. Good work, fellas. Cheese, in all caps.
Well, one, I like cheese, and I'm going to assume... You know what? Actually, no. I'm going to say I like cheese, and I am not going to assume this is a Shea Gorath reference at all. It's just a cheese reference.
It's just a cheese reference. All right, I'm going to do the opposite and assume CC French is actually Shea Gorath, leaving us a review.
Okay, in disguise. Fair enough.
So there you go. You got both ends of the spectrum there. So thank you for taking the time to do that. That actually helps a ton. We really do appreciate that. It keeps us up in the rankings and all of that.
Yeah. We're actually, again, we can only respond to stuff that has words. But again, I always say I appreciate anybody who takes the time to leave us stars because that helps. You don't need to leave us words. We can just thank you because we see your name if that's the case. We're almost to 1,000 reviews on the US version of Spotify, which is pretty wild.
That's pretty wild. Yeah, 319 on Apple, at least the US part of Apple so far. So
yeah, and it's like I think we're about 900, which is a lot of reviews. So thank you all for taking the time to do that for us. It's greatly appreciated.
Very, very much so. So thank you, everybody. Also, I said we have another voicemail this week. This one's a really cool idea. It's almost 4 minutes long, so I'm going to summarize it. I really do. This is from Follower Apocalypse, who talks with everybody on the Discord all the time, has a really cool idea here. But just because, I'd rather keep things to around a minute, maybe two at most, but 4 minutes is a little long. But I can summarize this pretty quick, because Follower has a really fun idea about Hollowjack. Remember the episode we did a long time ago about Hollowjack? And how Hollowjack feeds off the fear of other people and those sort of things. So Follower says, if you have a dead Hollowjack who fears off the fears of mortals whilst they pray to the gods. So I have this idea for how to create a weakness and manipulate them. First, you basically get two potions, one potion that helps restore your health, another potion that helps restore your magic so that you maintain, so that if you get your life force sucked from you, you basically maintain and like you can survive that. And then on top of that, you figure out, let me get to the part. You get health absorption from when you get hurt using those potions. And then I'm scrolling down. You find a way to, oh, where did it go? I'm missing it. So you use the Illusion School of Magic in order to make Hollowjack appear pitiable rather than scary. So the idea would be you basically turn Hollowjack into a wimp who barely gets out of bed in the morning and seems to just be a pitiable character, so therefore can't use the fear against you. So you use the combination of potions and then illusion magic in order to basically disarm Hollowjack. And then Hollowjack's no longer scary.
I like the idea of, because they messaged me after the side, because, shout out to Follower, because this actually is a pretty neat idea just in relation to Hollowjack. They had messaged me off to the side. It's kind of interesting just on the idea of it's like, okay, well, by essentially like making Hollowjack kind of lame, you're taking away one of his benefits of like, okay, well, I'm scaring you, but it's like, well, no, you're not. So you don't have the fear effect.
Right. And then you just look pathetic.
Right. And then as he attempts any type of physical damage to you, it would be just as detrimental in this scenario, because it would just kind of be like flip-flopping what he's taking from you, but it's regenerating your health in terms of, you know, the gameplay mechanic to it. So it's just kind of funny that him basically engaging with you would be his own downfall. His best scenario, it's like honestly a death loop. It's like the ultimate tanking move.
Right.
If you just ignore the tank, then you can probably get by way better than if you actually engage with a tank, especially in like, you know, for anybody who plays the PvP side of Elder Scrolls Online. A lot of times people just get obsessed with like, well, I have to try to kill this person because they're there. Mm-hmm. Well, the answer is actually to just go around them, because they're probably not doing anything to you unless you do something to them.
Right. Yeah. So, avoid the tank, attack the DPS and the healer. Yes.
Correct. Right. And that this is kind of like a lore practical way of kind of explaining away a demi prince, which I thought was kind of funny. I thought it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, yeah. So very cool idea. Thank you for dropping that idea in the voicemail. If you would like to send us another voicemail, voiceline.app/Elder Scrolls is where to do it. And there's a link in the description of the show and all that stuff. You can get to that stuff. And I apologize, Paul. I'm sure you probably were hoping we play it, but 4 minutes is a little long. But if any of you would like to leave us another message, try to keep it to about a minute. And if it goes a little bit longer, I can summarize it for you at like the terrible job I did here for follower. But I think again, the point got across and Lotus.
Yeah, luckily I had their DM up on my other screen too, where they clarified it a little bit. So again, like I thought it was a neat idea for just like, it's almost using a gameplay. One of the things I really like is when you can apply gameplay mechanics to the like
the lore
of the series.
Yeah,
it's just kind of, I don't know. I find that very amusing where it's like, oh yeah, the lore reason for this is actually a gameplay mechanic in the series. I find that fun when those tie in with each other.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is a fun idea. It would be really cool if future games gave you the ability to do stuff like this. Like, imagine Hollowjack showing up in Elder Scrolls 6, and then we take Follower's idea, and we're like, well, what if we maintain our health, we maintain our magicka, we use these spells or these potions, we do this thing, and then all of a sudden we use illusion magic and Hollowjack doesn't look scary anymore. And we're like,
yeah. So the more he messes with you, the more he drains himself, the more you end up benefiting from the scenario. It's like, great, cool, love this.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's neat because there's always those things in the series. And I know it seems like Bethesda might not particularly like you finding these weird loopholes. And that's actually one of my favorite things about the series. But like, all the way back, you know, to some of the beginning ones where it's just like, yeah, I made a spell that damages this skill, and then I went and leveled this skill up, so now I can level up forever. It's just like, okay, I just came up with a magicka reason to explain why I can basically train myself in perpetuity.
Right.
It's like,
and this stuff was more common in the older games. You know, games like Morrowind and Oblivion, you could really like leverage really some of that stuff.
Morrowind was a mess.
Yeah,
I love it for it.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. So yeah, this totally fits the whole like historical aesthetic of how you could kind of break things.
The lore of the game mechanics.
Right, game mechanic lore. We should do an episode on that. So thanks again, follower. The very, very cool stuff. We've got one more thing to do. We've got the random page before we call it a show. This week we have... All right, Lotus, we've got another Elder Scrolls Online thing. This is...
These are always a mixed bag.
So the Elder Scrolls Online places Stormhaven buildings, the dock warehouse.
What?
Why didn't we get, like... We could have gotten something like, you know, the Mythic Dawn, or, you know, like...
Stormhaven buildings?
Oblivion portals. The dock warehouse is a large building at the docks of Wayrest. A letter can be found under the stairs. That's the description. It has residents. It has residents. You wonder who the residents are? There's Annabelle.
You might as well.
Annabelle Jirenis, Arthur Garrick, and Gwenuinas. What?
Classic.
How do you even pronounce that name? Gwenuinas is a wood elf drunkard who can be found in the dock warehouse. All right. There's a related quest. A gang of thugs. You help the captain of the Wayrest Guard rid the city of a gang of bullies. During the quest, you must come here to kill Andre the Grinder. That sounds like somebody's terrible nickname in college.
Yeah, that's an internet website I don't want anything to do with.
Don't go there. Don't go to AndreTheGrinder.com.
That is not safe for Elder Scrolls work.
Yeah, so there you go. That's our random page of the week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening to my nonsense theories. I hope you are having a great time if Oblivion is out. In fact, you know what? Join our Discord. Let us know your thoughts. I would love to hear everybody's thoughts about that game or this theory. If you've got some counterpoints to the theory, like, please do not.
I know sometimes I like to be able to throw counterpoints at you, and I actually kind of am on board with this one. So I didn't have many good counterpoints because I kind of share a lot of the sentiments you had. And you know, a lot of this discussion is, you know, related to kind of it's luck that we sort of just started talking about Oblivion in some ways, kind of at your suggestion. And then it seemed like all of the leak hype has kind of spiraled in all sorts of directions. So, you know, we know people have been interested in this, but either way, whether it seems like it's real, but whether or not it is real, do yourself a favor and play Oblivion however you can. I mean, ideally, we'll be getting this later on this year. We'll be finally getting to see Sky Oblivion, which looks incredible. Shout out to Rebels and the whole team over there.
Yeah.
For that amazing fan project that's finally getting close to completion. And, you know, it's not the easiest thing to hook up, but because it's definitely, as we said, it's 19 years old, but you can still play it on several different platforms. It's backwards compatible if you have an Xbox. It's, you know, I think it's on Steam.
Yeah, it's on Steam.
I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
yeah, I was going to say, it's still worth playing. It's a little dated in some ways, but it's still totally playable to this day. It's more playable to many than I would say Morrowind is, and Morrowind's like one of my favorite games ever.
It might be really cool to jump into the old version before the new versions drop.
See what the differences are.
And then see what the differences are. Be like, oh yeah, this really does feel different. Because we all remember things better than they were. You know, like,
there's the, like, you know, nostalgia goggles.
Yeah, nostalgia. You're like, oh, that game looked awesome. And then you load it back up and you're like, oh yeah, I remember this now.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's why I really like some of the well done, without going on a total tangent here, it's why I do enjoy some of the well crafted remakes or remasters, oftentimes remasters, because one studio that I have no affiliation with, I just think they're great, Night Dive Studios, they do a whole bunch of boomer shooter things. Yeah. So they work with
I know you love
Bethesda.
Those.
Yeah. I love those things. Yeah. You know, Quake, Turok, Doom, all these games, stuff like System Shock. It's just interesting because when I play them, it looks and plays like I remember playing on the N64.
But it's not.
And then I remember I fired up my N64 and played Turok 2, and I was like, this runs at 4 frames a second.
Yeah. When I was much younger, this was all I had, so it was fine. But now that we've been spoiled with, like, modern technology and games, it's not the same. Also, real quick, on the lore and the ideas of, like, coming up with these theories and things like that, I want to promote the idea of, like, counterpoints without being rude. You know, like, we've gotten to the point on the internet where especially as a content creator, as soon as you say something in a video and somebody disagrees with you, they call you an idiot and they're like, well, that's totally wrong because of this, and that's super counter and, like, productive. Like, that doesn't actually help anybody. If you can poke a hole in the argument, please do.
I love stuff like that. That's always usually pretty entertaining. And if you're weird, I just don't talk to you.
So. Right. Let's be like scientists about this. And, like, here's my theory, you know, and then you go, okay, well, let's check the theory with this information. And then maybe between the two of us or three of us or whoever else is commenting, we can get closer and closer to the truth about it because we all have different ideas and we all respect each other. So,
well, if you're a fan of this series, it sort of seems like you would want to do that because it's basically ingrained into the series to want to do that. So, like,
yeah, that's all just part of it. That's all part of it.
Work on your creative thinking because it's super fun if you can come up with, like, good counterpoints to any of the stuff. Because, again, a lot of this is sort of just how we all interpret it. And
it's all theories.
Yeah, I encourage alternate theories to some of the stuff we throw out there. I'm entertained by those almost as much as kind of coming up with my own theories sometimes.
Yep. Yeah. And real quick before we end it, somebody commented on one of the Fallout Lorecast videos recently about, like, it's about the Enclave and how they're going to come. I have a theory that they're not gone. They're going to come back in Fallout 5. This was before the TV show came out that I posted all of this. Anyway, somebody responded and was like, oh, this is all just speculation garbage. Like, you get a life, that sort of thing. And I was like... I was like, what? I was like, this speculation is fun. Why don't we do
it? You're listening to a Lorecast show. What?
Right. Like, speculation is fun. So maybe just enjoy speculating. And also, we won't have any definitive answers about Elder Scrolls V for years. So if you clicked on the video expecting that I somehow had insider knowledge about what's actually going on in Elder Scrolls V and it hasn't even begun development yet, then who's the idiot?
Six. Because I was going to say...
No, like, five. Or, I mean, Fallout 5, not Elder Scrolls. Fallout 5.
Okay, yes, that makes sense.
It was a Fallout video. Fallout 5. And I was like, come on. You're clicking on videos like this expecting hard facts? Who's the idiot? You know, anyway,
Only hard facts.
I'll get off my soapbox. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. Oh, we appreciate you checking out the show and hanging out with us. And we'll be back next week to maybe we'll be talking with our patrons, maybe talking about Oblivion Remake. We'll have to see. And until then, oh, and wait, Lotus, you probably have stuff to pitch. I forgot. We're wrapping this up.
I mean, sort of, kind of. Like, we kind of crossed with the feeds for the last show because of the whole big Elder Scrolls Online reveal that me, you, and Ark did. We had it on both feeds so that, you know, I know we have a lot of overlap on show, but just for people who prefer one show or the other, and the other one doesn't really work for them. But then we did a follow-up episode because actually HyperPixie, friend of the show, former co-host of the show, and still, you know, regular, whenever she's available, guest, got to play it hands-on as kind of a way to, like, see people who have kind of fallen away from Elder Scrolls Online to see how they liked the new system, if it made sense, you know, being separated from the game, not being in it quite as frequently. Like, does it work for them? And she did have a lot of fun with it. She's got obviously some stuff that she was concerned about, some stuff that she really liked. So if you're interested in that type of Elder Scrolls Online specific side of things, and then some side discussion on the potential Oblivion leaks, that was the most recent show of Tales of Tamriel. But other than that, what with Easter coming up, I don't think we're gonna have time to do another show this week. So you got two shows last week, and we're gonna probably go back to our bi-weekly schedule for that show.
Well, you get two Tales of Tamriel, you get one of our shows, and then you get another show next week. We're still on the regular schedule, so there you go. Well, cool, go check out Lotus's stuff, and if you want any other of my stuff, robotsradio.net. there's lots of, we have something like four or five new shows have joined the network in the last few months. So the network is growing. There are some really cool shows that are joining up, and a big announcement that's going to be rolled out in the next few weeks, an existing show that I think is super cool is coming to the network. So lots of stuff going on there. And otherwise, just thanks for being here, and we'll see you next week. And until then,
appreciate you.
Well, you know, keep the dragon fires lit, unless it doesn't actually matter, in which case,
yeah,
screw it.
Yeah, exactly. Light them or don't, whatever.
Whatever. All right, we'll see you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.